Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the FV English podcast. Yes, this is still the FV English podcast, even though you're hearing a different voice. This is Dominic Bisogno. And I'm joined, first of all, by Kevin Vivas of Once Footve and Footve English. How are you doing, Kevin?
How are you, Dominic? Very good. I'm very happy to come back the Footve English podcast.
Your triumphant return.
Yes.
And we are also joined by, included in his many achievements, is the usual host of this podcast, Jordan Flores. How are you doing, Jordan?
Very well, thank you. Appreciate you hosting today. Really looking forward to the discussion and hearing lots from Kevin.
Yeah, so today is going to be a little different than our last couple episodes because we'll be talking primarily with Kevin about his experiences with Jordan and with the book Red Wine and Arepas as a translator, both for the written text and for Jordan while he was in Venezuela. So I guess we'll just start off with Kevin. Can you kind of tell us about how you got involved with Jordan ahead of his trip and how you found yourself working as his translator?
Well, I think that between all the people that could have been chosen to make the trip with him, and fortunately, I was the chosen by Jordan. And I think that those were the best 2 weeks I have had in my life. I hope it will be repeated, but it was like an amazing experience because I have never visited the western part of Venezuela, like Mérida, San Cristóbal, Barinas, and I never expected to do it. And not because I didn't want, I just didn't find the moment to go there. And I went there with an amazing situation as translate a book of my favorite topic in all the world, which is the Venezuelan football.
Had you before teaming up with Jordan, had you done any like translation work of any kind before?
No, never, of course. And I was 22 years in that moment, and I have just been good in English, but I even don't think I am bilingual. I just have things to keep learning, and mainly in the speaking. I can read it perfectly, but well, I think it was a good, more than an opportunity to become a professional, if not as a life experience. And well, even it's not easy to find someone of my age which can be very knowledge about Venezuelan football and also knowing English. It's very few the people in Venezuelan football that can speak English. And well, we prove it during the trip that many people, many players, managers, presidents, and even journalists needed someone to translate.
When it was decided that you were going to take this on, and as you mentioned, there's kind of a new challenge for you. What were you feeling? Were you nervous about this? Were you more excited? Like, what was your mentality going into it?
Well, really, I was never nervous about being with Jordan. I always had very big confidence with him. We were talking like in the past 3 months of his arrival, and I felt very comfortable. Even look at him in person, it was like if I would have known it, and maybe Jordan can confirm it. And maybe my most nervous situation were when I had to translate him, for example, in a TV show, in a radio show, because I always specify it. I'm not bilingual completely. I'm not doing this work because I'm a translator. I'm just his friend, which can control my English speaking, and I know about football. Yes, for example, the TV show, we were going to be live, and suddenly Maduro's speech came, and I was not going to be in live. So it was very relaxing for me that if any mistake were committed, it would be alive. So it happened also, maybe the only interview in which I was nervous, it was in front of Richard Páez, an eminence, a personality in Venezuelan football. And I was seeing in front of me like my first hero in football. And suddenly I was there in front of him in a coffee bar, talking with him, sharing a coffee, cookies, and of course, a guy of 22 years. It was not easy to not be nervous.
I'll take you in quick, Jordan. Just to add to that, from your perspective going into this, you're the one flying across the equator and so on. How did you feel about like this opportunity to team up with Kevin? How are you feeling about meeting him in person and traveling with him?
Yeah, so to begin with, Kevin was only going to accompany me in Caracas, which would be the first 6 days and the last 3 days. So I would have had a period of about seven, eight days in between that I wouldn't have been with him. And I now think about that possibility and I can't imagine doing that stage of the journey without him. It really was until, I think, 24 hours before I left Caracas to go to Maracay that we knew for sure that Kevin could come. Kevin was and still is studying at university and had already missed practically a week of lessons to be with me. And I literally had to say to Kevin's dad, like, can I take him for another week, please? Because I couldn't imagine going on without him. Like, I had offers in each city that I was going to for people to help me with translation and helping me with where I was going to stay and stuff. But after a couple of days, it was like evident that not only could Kevin translate, but like we were really good friends. We got along so well. And there's so many memories I have from my time in Venezuela that has nothing to do with football. Like the evenings we shared together were great. Kevin had me at his house for most of the time in the end, instead of staying at the hotel when we were in Caracas. I think it ended up being like 50-50 between the hotel and Kevin's flat. And I just couldn't imagine and doing it with anyone else after those first few days.
Absolutely. And you know, as somebody that's read the book, and there's a chunk of the book that's kind of sort of a first person narrative, those parts of the book, I mean, Kevin is absolutely a part of that story. So it's definitely interesting to think about the fact that wasn't originally the plan. Speaking of the book, the final product, Kevin, of course, has worked on translating the text into Spanish for an actual Spanish copy of the book. So that's a job I have absolutely no experience with. That's something that's really interesting to me, Kevin. So can you talk to us a little bit about like what that process is day to day in terms of like how do you organize a task like that? How do you schedule out a task like that?
Well, I started to translate and the book was not ready yet. It has like 10 chapters maybe ready. And Jordan started to send me like chapter by chapter or two chapters by two chapters. I started making the translation on my iPad. And I remember I was on class and when the teacher was a bit boring, I started to type and translating. And well, you can see the first chapters I translated. And I have not the same, I don't know the word to find the word, like the same talent, like the same ability to make it as good as it was becoming in the next chapters. And well, so I started to take like a process, then just translate. And after translate several chapters, almost all the chapters, starting to correct perfectly the grammar. Right now I'm using like three steps to correct. First, I am reading and I correct any grammatical mistake or orthographic mistake that maybe can be found. And then I start to compare the English version with the Spanish version in order to maybe I couldn't get part of the text that Jordan wrote And then the final part, the third part, is just reading high voice in order to see if the fluency of the text is okay. And so the Spanish readers can be feel comfortable with that Jordan text, which is, of course, a big challenge, because he's right. It's very poetic, very attractive, and I try to copy and become the same energy in the Spanish book.
Was it, because I don't know this part of the story, was it always the plan for you to translate the book, or like from the moment you guys made your initial plan of the travel, or did that come up later?
Well, it was all of that. For example, Jordan contacted me because I am the Once Football director, the figure, and he just wrote me, and then I think that Jordan found him best someone of his age that could translate, that could know about football, and we become friends. And suddenly I told him, well, I live alone, maybe you can come here. And well, Jordan offered me to pay me something for just staying. I say that it was okay. I do not have any problem with that. But then Jordan started to find other contacts, and he found Ruben Villavicencio, which offered us to stay in their hotel the hotel which Atletico Venezuela's rent. And then it was happening suddenly. Then I offered that, well, yes, I am able to translate the book. And I think that it was convenient for Jordan in a way that I knew all the story. I knew big part of football, of any data that I could correct him in the book. And for example, something happened in the trip that he forgot, or that he didn't write correctly, just for a bit and a short data. And I can correct it, I can add something. And Jordan always, of course, with permission, gave me he allowed me to make minimal changes if it was okay, of course.
And Jordan, as this person who's, you know, working on your first book, and you're making this kind of big move to travel and all that, how helpful was it to know that, and of course you're an English speaking person writing about a subject that is obviously very deeply connected to Spanish, how helpful was it to know that you were going to have somebody that could help make sure that your work was readable to the Spanish speaking world?
Yeah, I think the most important thing about it is that Kevin's Venezuelan. You know, Venezuelan Spanish, in the same way that American English differs from English, like there's nuances. And that really, although I was aware of it, that really became prominent when a Spanish editor contacted me and asked me if I'd like to submit a piece to this anthology that he was curating for world football, stories from around the world in Spanish. And I said, yeah, absolutely. You know, Kevin, I already have a translator for it, because they were asking me to submit into English for them to translate. And I said, yeah, I've already got a translator who's translating Red Wine and Arepas. It would be perfect for him and for me if we just submit a chapter from the Spanish translation, which we did. And the Spanish editor got back to me and he was saying, oh, well, what does this mean? Because we don't use that in Spanish. So for example, like if you win the league in Venezuela, like they call it Estrella, like the star. They don't do that in Spanish. And other little things like turns of phrase that make perfect sense in Venezuelan, like similes or metaphors, like there's no equivalent in Spanish. And that was actually really important to me, because at the end of the day, the same with the English is the one side of the coin for the purpose of the book was to like educate the non-Venezuelan world about Venezuela. But on the other flip side, the book is for Venezuelans. Like I've gone there, I've written about their football, their country, it's theirs. So it was really important for me for the translator to be Venezuelan, because it would show if it was translated by a Spanish person. And it was really, really beneficial for Kevin to translate it, having been there with me. So, you know, other than the first maybe 8 chapters of the book, Kevin was literally there in person with me for the other 25. Like he said, if there were details that I'd missed about the trip, he was like, oh, you know, you've missed this out. Don't you think it would be good to include it? That was really, really valuable. And not only did Kevin translate, he also fact checked the English. So when I'd finished the manuscript, Kevin read through it and was one of two or three fact checkers and proofreaders that I had, which again was really valuable. So there were little things, like one example is Estudiantes de Mérida seemed to have one more foreign player on their books than was allowed. And the situation was, it was Jaime Moreno, who is Venezuelan born, but he represents Nicaragua. So, you know, like little things like that could have easily gone amiss to not just me, but also a Spanish translator was picked up perfectly by Kevin, because he was just so much more than a translator. Like I don't like saying, oh yeah, Kevin, my translator, because like he was so much more than that. And B, like, I think within a day of being together, like we were really good friends. Like we had those 3 months running into the trip where we were obviously talking on a pretty much daily basis. But then also, especially how the first 24 hours in Venezuela went, brought us like very close, very quickly. And it was a really good time. One of the things that made me appreciate just how valuable Kevin was to the book was on my last night in Caracas, or one of my last nights in Caracas, we had an evening at Kevin's house with one of his best friends and a couple of people that we'd met at the football game, his best friend being called Samuel. And obviously I'd asked Kevin to come with me for the rest of the trip. What I didn't quite realize at the time, that would actually end up being the last time Kevin saw Samuel, because he was emigrating to Portugal. Like that really took me back. I was like, wow, like he's willingly made this decision to accompany me around Venezuela, knowing full well he was sacrificing like, you know, a few more days with his best mate. To me, like that book was that end of one thing. Like, you know, the book was finished, like you close the book, it's done, but it was the start of hopefully a big future where Kevin and I will work together on many projects.
Kevin, do you want to add anything to that about what drove you to go, you know, go out of your way and really dedicate yourself to helping Jordan in examples like that, where, you know, you kind of went the extra mile to make sure he had what he needed, even if it kind of got in the way of maybe your usual plans for yourself?
Well, for example, keeping the line of Jordan and, well, making a part of the question, Jordan make a little part of that chapter. He wrote that, I am just here. I'm from England. These three girls are from Portuguese, another state very far from Caracas. And Kevin live in Caracas, and his friend Samuel will leave Portugal in the next days. And for this, I realize how ephemeral can be the life. And well, that's even amazing. When I left my friend Samuel in his house, I didn't know that it was going to be the last time I was gonna see Samuel. At least, well, it has happened 1 year and a half, and I don't know when will be the next time. And when Jordan asked me to make the trip with him in Venezuela, I have, yes, that effectively that feeling that I maybe I was not gonna see my friend in much time. But I know, and I told him to my friend, this is a big, very, very big opportunity. I'm gonna live an experience that no one can say, probably in Venezuela, to be the translator of an English book, interviewing people that you have never known you're gonna meet in at least a short place, visiting the stadiums that I always seen, always watched in the television when I was a child, and I was gonna see them. I was even in the Estadio Olímpico Hermanos Jerzy Páez in Maracay, which is just like 5,000, and I was, wow, I'm finally here. And when I was, of course, in Metropolitano de Mérida, which is 42,000 of attendance, and Pueblo Nuevo as well, La Carolina, 27, I was like impressed and grateful of being there. And of course, it was something that also it made more strong my connection with Jordan, because now it was not only Jordan the unknown in Venezuela, it was Jordan and me. The only advantage I had is that I could speak Spanish. But when we were stuck in Los Andes, in the mountain, we have the same feelings, we had the same context, I just could control the language, and it's that we were immersed in an adventure, but a very, very good adventure, because we lived scenes that we never imagined, and we also had a phrase which we say, it's for the book.
It's for the book. And
it could have been seen like on purpose, but many things happened without expecting, and that make more amazing this book that I make an apart to suggest him is the best book I have read about Venezuelan football, and I have read many, and it is because it is not just about Venezuelan football, it is about everything in Venezuela, society, religion, culture. It's amazing, and I'm glad to be part of this.
One thing that you were just talking about, and you talked about earlier, like I think just when we started, about how you got to go to parts of the country that you hadn't really been to before, and then you were just talking about stadiums and so on. Did you, I imagine the answer is yes, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Did you learn more about Venezuela from this like journey to, from my experience, I haven't been there since I was a baby, but in the United States, for instance, I've learned more about the United States from the times I've been able to go to different parts of the United States. With you being able to do that in Venezuela, did you feel like you learned more about your country from being able to go to these different places?
Yes, of course, for sure. And as even Jordan wrote in the book, Caracas is a kind of bubble, We the most of time we have all the basic service, of course, with some problems like the power, the water, the fuel in that moment. And when I traveled to Mérida, San Cristóbal, Barinas, I started to be grateful or lucky of living in Caracas, because the situation they had with fuel, with power, and well, with water, not so much. It has very, very heavy. And I started to say my friends, and well, we are in this situation, but we don't know if we can become of that situation, because when I went there, they really live in a very bad conditions, and we have to be not only grateful, if just coaches, if it can happen in Caracas. For lucky, for now, it has not been like that. And also a thing that I could see and that Jordan could see is that, for example, cities like Barinas is right now like a ghost city. There is no one there. And we went to the biggest or the second biggest in a Sunday. It was completely empty. All the stores closed. And there was just like three or four business of food, and the tables were all empty. It's very, very different in Caracas. I don't know how will be that actually with the new dollarization, in the informal dollarization, but it makes me be thankful of being in Caracas, and with respect to all the people outside Caracas, of course. Well, basically, yes, I knew my city, my country, and I wanted to know it. I'd be glad to be there again, because I love the football.
Just to add to that, Jordan, what was that like for you, seeing how things changed dramatically, sort of city to city, state to state, as you were traveling across the country?
It was interesting. It's like each city or area that we went to sort of like had its own problem that defined it. Different cities were suffering different shortages. I like the only place I actually experienced the water shortage was in Caracas, which was probably the opposite to what I expected. 2 weeks before I went to Venezuela, I broke my arm quite badly. So I was in a cast from my wrist to my shoulder. And because of how the first night went in Venezuela, we didn't get to the hotel till very late. And I was too tired to have a shower. At that point, I'd been traveling for nearly 48 hours. I was really tired. It was hot anyway. And I was just like, I'll shower in the morning. And I got into the shower and the water like came out in a burst and then very quickly started trickling out. And I was like, no, this can't be happening. Like, I'll turn on the other tap. I don't care if it's cold. And the water just didn't come out. and I was head to toe lathered up in soap. And at that moment, I was just like, why am I here? Like, I've made a bad decision. Because, like, obviously a lot of people were making me aware of the problems or shortages that I could encounter in Venezuela. And I was aware of them. I didn't go into it blind. But if I thought about them too much, I was worried that it would stop me from chucking myself into it. And then, like, when we went to Barinas, the first night in the hotel, there was a power cut, a blackout. But then the hotel's generator kicked in and took over. So it wasn't a problem. When we went to Merida, we went to the stadium and all the lights were off. And so when we went into the bowels of the stadium to go and see the changing rooms and stuff, the groundsman there literally like used his phone as a torch to direct us through because they were just, I think he said that they turned the electricity off to save it rather than there was no supply. Whereas I think in Táchira, it was the other way around. Like the stadium was at that point without electric. So yeah, it was eye-opening. And the traffic or the queues for petrol in Merida were the longest I saw. They were very long when we came out of Barinas, but in Merida, they were much longer. And that trip from Barinas to Merida was really like where the saying between Kevin and I, like it's for the book, really became what kept us going. Because when we were in Barinas, we had the opportunity to travel back towards Caracas. Kike Garcia, the Aragua manager, said, you know, if you want to come back with us on the team bus to Maracay, like you can, but we're traveling back tonight. Kevin and I made a split second decision to stay. I think Kevin was completely committed to carrying on, but was willing to do whatever I decided. And I really was 50-50 because people were telling us how hard it would be to get to Merida. We, at that point, the thing driving us forward was getting to Táchira. We like really wanted to get there. It was sort of like the furthest point we were going to go and then get back to Caracas was the problem. We were like, well, how are we going to do that? Because the flights were intermittent and we didn't know if we were going to be able to get one. The drive is like 12 to 13 hours long. So it was really a case of, well, do we keep going, having no idea how we're going to get back and potentially like waste a lot of time? As we were driving from Barinas to Merida up and over the Andes, the driver was so erratic. And I was sat in the back seat. Kevin was in the front seat and they'd been chatting for a while. And I was like listening in, but not really participating. And when there was a break in conversation, I just said to Kevin, like, is it me or is he driving like crazy? And Kevin was like, no, he's driving like crazy. We were like winding up the Andes and he was pretty much on the wrong side of the road when we went round blind corners. He wasn't slowing down. He was like going uphill, like ramping his car up. And what I hadn't really paid any attention to is as we were leaving Barinas on this very flat, very long straight road, he was saying, well, as we get into the mountains, I'll turn off the aircon because the engine won't cope with it. Well, the engine wasn't going to cope with anything. As we got to like this little like village settlement kind of thing quite high up, he was still driving erratically. We were coming like downhill into the settlement and he crashed into this other car. And I just could not believe it. Like we'd crashed in the Andes and Kevin turned around to me with me in the back seat and he just went, do not speak. He's like, if they see your English, they're going to want lots of money. So I just stayed silent. And I think we were lucky that it was definitely our driver's fault, but the other driver was drunk. And so he literally settled for some money on the spot and probably well under what he was entitled to. At this point, the car was just chugging along, like really lethargically. And within about 20, 30 minutes of that crash, it just gave out entirely. And the sun was setting. It was getting very cold very quickly. And I think we were practically at the highest point altitude wise we were going to get. We were both like on the side of the road thinking like, wow, how has this happened? We've broken down the middle of the Andes. What are we going to do next? It's for the book is what kept us going. Obviously, it was all right. We're both here now. But yeah, that saying really kept us going when things were sort of getting in our way. I don't believe in fate. I know like Kevin maybe possibly does, but things just worked out. Thing we were lucky, but we were also determined, and I think that partnership worked nicely.
That's awesome. Apparently nature was doing it for the book too, and that yeah. Other driver was doing it for the book. A lot of people doing it for the book. So just to close out, just back to Kevin real quick, I guess I just want to give you an opportunity to just kind of talk about what it's meant to you to collaborate on this book project, what it means to you collaborate now with Footvay English, and tell us how you really feel about being part of this.
Sometimes I'm disappointed about being on Footvay, and well, I have my other jobs. I have stages in which I say, maybe this is the definitely moment in which I left Footvay, and always something arrived that give me that attention with Footvay. I love football, and I love Venezuela. Those are the things I must love in my life, things that blend between those made me the thing that I most love in Hull, which is the Venezuelan football. I'll always be in my Twitter and defending. I shouldn't pay attention to that people, but when Argentinians, Chileans start to insult the Venezuelan football in the Libertadores post, the Sudamericanas post, I get inside and in those insults, and I always reply something in a very respectful way, because I see the football as my son, maybe. I want to be a good father. I want to make something big for them. And I think that I'm being part, with being a player with Once Football, I try to do the best for making a good coverage with Football English, which has becoming a very important window to the English world. And I think it will be increasing so much. With Red Wine Arepas is another splendid window I have, and we have. So I'll be happy, and I think I'll continue. Maybe I have in one moment, 2 months or 1 month of disappointment. I hope not. And then there will be something that made me continue the thing I most love, which is football.
We're going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much to both of you, Kevin and Jordan, for being here. We encourage everybody to check our YouTube and Spotify and all those platforms. We got a couple episodes up prior to this one with Kat Shepherd and Alex Stewart. And we hope that you enjoyed learning a little more about what goes into, you know, making a book like Red Wine and Arepas, what goes into running Footvay English, and the great work that these two guys did to really get the ball rolling on all this craziness that we have going on. So thank you for listening, and see you around.